The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
I'm joined now in the studio by the Minister for Foreign Affairs and Fine Gael TD from Meath East, Helen McEntee. Good morning to
morning,
you.
Claire,
you're welcome
hi.
To the programme. I want to start with the triple lock, because you've said that the government is in lockstep on the triple lock and the changes that are coming down the track. There's considerable unrest, though, in Fianna Fáil over it. Are you concerned about that?
Look, I think it's only natural if you're changing what is long-standing policy or legislation, there's going to be debate and discussion. But I mean, I saw this week alone, three Fianna Fáil colleagues who were out very clearly in support of that change.
But so 20 backbenchers led by Willie O'Dea are very firmly set against it. They're very concerned about it.
So again, my understanding is that they're asking for debate on what exactly it means. I mean, we've had the triple lock in legislation for a number of decades now. And what we're proposing to change, and this was agreed in our programme for government, is that we would remove the element of it, which essentially allows countries like China, like Russia, like the US to dictate not only where we keep our peacekeeping troops, but potentially where we send them. And personally, and I think most people agree, it shouldn't be for any country to decide where we send our troops. And it's important that we have this debate. It's important that we discuss it, because I do think there's a lot of misinformation out there.
But I'm sure you understand the concerns, because the triple lock is in legislation because of the Nice Treaty, when people were concerned about neutrality, and that's when it was put in legislation, so that people could be reassured. Now to turn around and say, well, it doesn't impact neutrality, but it did then. It doesn't sit well with people. It's concerning.
Well, look, the first thing I'd say is we were a neutral country before the triple lock was introduced. We've been a neutral country always. That's not going to change. So we're not proposing that that would change. And what I'd say is we'll continue to be a neutral country. When we introduced the triple lock, this was about making sure that we could provide a very clear picture and a process as to how our troops were sent abroad. It was at a time when the UN Security Council was operating in a very different way. And I think we all have to take on board the fact that time has changed and the council itself is not working. So we've had no new UN mandated peacekeeping mission since 2014, because they've either been blocked or they haven't gone to a vote, because you have five permanent members on that council that can decide to veto any vote. We now have a situation where our troops that have spent decades in the Lebanon are now having to remove themselves from the Lebanon in the next 6 months, because it was not allowed to continue, because there was going to be very clearly a voting down of that mission by the US if it went to a vote. Now, how can we allow a situation as a country? We are the only country in the world that would allow a situation whereby another country, another superpower, the likes of Russia, that is waging a war in Ukraine for the past 4 years, that they would be able to dictate where we send our troops. And we've had in the last 3 weeks alone another mission that we've been 6 years a part of. It's in the Mediterranean. It was called Operation Irini, or it still is, because other troops are still there. But because that is not continuing with the UN mandated mission, our troops quite literally overnight had to come home. And I happened to be in Italy at the time, and I met with those three officers that were there. And they've said the only people that are losing out, it's the Irish people, because of the experience, because of what we contribute, how well we are regarded on these missions. And they are all peacekeeping missions. So to reassure people, because I think this narrative that we're going to suddenly become this country that sends our troops off to war, the legislation that is being proposed and that government has proposed is very specific to peacekeeping. It's very clear the types of missions that they would be sent on. It's very clear that this would still have to be over a certain number approved by the Dáil. There would still be oversight. And I think it's only right and proper that it is the people who are democratically elected in this country are the ones that decide, with the Defence Forces, obviously, where our troops go, and not countries like Russia, China, the US, many of whom are engaged in conflict at the moment.
Just on that, it's a real vote of no confidence in the UN, isn't it? You know, we're saying the UN is not working anymore.
This part of it isn't. And I don't think we're shying away from that. And the UN themselves know that. So, I mean, I'm regularly engaged with the UN, with the deputy secretary who's involved in the mission in Lebanon. You know, so it's not that they're saying, what is Ireland doing? We can't believe they're doing this. They're very supportive of the fact that we want to continue to send troops abroad, and we're actually going to be prevented from potentially doing that. So if there's new missions being proposed in Lebanon, depending on what they are, we may or may not be able to join. And for a country that has such a proud tradition, I mean, I went to the last ceremony where, you know, you basically send off the troops to Lebanon. Their families come, they're there, they come together. There's people who have gone on 4 and 5 missions. Their parents have gone on missions, their cousins, there's generations of family members. And we are saying now that potentially if a new mission, depending on what it is put in Lebanon, we mightn't be able to do that because we don't have a UN security mandated mission. I don't think it's right. I think we are a sovereign country and I think we should be able to determine where we send our troops. And it's important. I'm glad we're having this discussion because there's a lot of things around it's in our constitution. We can't do this without a referendum. It's not in our constitution. And I think legislation over time, when the world changes, we've more conflicts happening than we've had since World War II on Europe, but across the world. We have a lot of challenges that are happening and the UN Security Council is not operating as it should. So the idea that we would keep our legislation simply because, well, that's what we decided 40 or 50 years ago. We have to move with the times. We have to have, I think, honest and mature debate and discussion with people. But we also have to be clear about where we are now. And quite simply, there are members of our defence forces who have joined the defence forces to take part in peacekeeping missions that won't be able to do that and that have already been sent home from missions they're on because of the triple lock. Okay.
But the triple lock, the moves to remove it from legislation, they've been delayed, have they, into the autumn now?
So not that I'm aware of. I mean, the plan was to bring it forward in the autumn.
Did Micheál Martin not say that this weekend, or when he was this week when he was talking to his parliamentary party, that there will be time for discussion because it's not going to happen until later, much later in the year?
So my plan is to bring it forward in the new term. There's a lot of legislation going through the Dáil and the Seanad at the moment. So it's always the case in the last few weeks you want to get that done.
So you're
done.
Saying that was always your plan to
I'm bringing other legislation through at the moment as well. So the plan was to bring it in the new term. And I think it's important that we have debate and discussion, not just within political parties, but I know there's a lot of people, for all the reasons that you've outlined, have interest in this. But it's a clear commitment. And you know, as I said, when it comes to government, we debated, we discussed this. It's in our programme for government for all of the reasons that I've outlined.
I want to move to the Occupied Territories Bill because it passed committee stage yesterday, wasn't it?
Yes, last night.
So some TDs accused you and the government of putting together a half-baked piece of legislation to avoid annoying the Americans. Are they right? What do you say to that?
So look, we've had quite a few hours of debate on this and I've outlined very clearly the reason as to why we're doing this. So there was a 2024 court ruling, an international court ruling, to say that countries should take every steps possible to prevent trade from happening with the illegal occupied territories. So that's something we take very seriously and I think other countries do as well. What I'm doing at the moment in trying to respond to that is a two-pronged approach. So bringing forward legislation specifically to ban trade in goods. And then at a European level, I'm advocating that we would move collectively within Europe to ban goods or to ban trade overall, which would include services.
And you're saying that we can't do that unilaterally. We can't ban trade, including services.
So trade is a European competence generally. Okay. That's always the approach.
But we can do it with goods.
So because of the 2024 ruling, there was a very clear focus on public policy and goods. I have been given very clear advice that that does not, on that legal basis, does not exist in the same way when it comes to services. The implementation of it as well, because it crosses over so many different pieces of legislation, so many different customs elements, so many different legal instruments that the implementation of it would be extremely complex. But on top of that, if we were to do it at a European level, you remove all of those challenges, but you also send a much stronger signal. Ireland has, since this conflict started, been to the fore in advocating at a European level for Europe to move together. And I'm as frustrated as everybody else is that that hasn't happened. Okay. I genuinely am. But it is starting to shift and it's starting to move.
But if the Israelis take a box of oranges that are produced in the occupied territories and mix those oranges with those that are produced in Israel, that would come through to Ireland, wouldn't it?
So look, there are different rules in place already at the moment. So we have what's called the EU-Israel Association Agreement. It's an agreement between Israel and the EU on trade. Within that, there are specific technical measures around anything that comes from the occupied territories. So you have to have an ability to be able to check where goods have come from, what the origins of those goods are. And then that's applied as to whether or not it's an Israeli good, whether or not it's a Palestinian product, whether it's from the occupied territories or otherwise. I suppose for me, what's important is that is implemented firstly at a European level and within our own customs. But also what we're talking about when it comes to goods is making sure that we can very clearly define where a good has come from. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're using a postal code system.
But they can circumvent it by mixing the goods, can't they, from the territories?
So look, you have to try and make sure that you have as strict a mechanism as possible to make sure that if something is coming out of Israel, that you have some form of clarity as to where that's coming from, anything that's coming from the occupied territories, that that is the same as well. So, I mean, there are always challenges with any type of trade of this kind. But what we are doing here is saying very clearly anything that we identify that's coming from the occupied territories, that's coming from an Israeli settlement, that we are not going to do trade with them and that there's going to be penalties. I have to stress at the European level, that is how economically, financially and politically you send the strongest message. And I've been advocating for that for months now and we are making progress.
Can I talk to you about the risks associated with this bill? We had law lecturer Larry Donnelly in here last week. He said Ireland is at risk of losing international relationships because of the perception, aided by the passing of this bill, of anti-Semitism here in Ireland. Does that concern you?
So I'm genuinely concerned at the rise in anti-Semitism. I think we all are, and I think we have a responsibility, I do as an elected representative, to make sure that we push back on any form of hatred or any form of anti-Semitism in this country. But I think we can separate what we are trying to do here, which is very specifically targeted at the Israeli government and their actions, and us very clearly upholding what is an international court ruling saying that we should not be doing trade with these settlements. But I also have a responsibility as a government minister introducing legislation, as does government, to make sure you have legislation that is legally sound, that is not immediately going to be open to challenge, that you can implement and that has the effect that you want it to have.
But does this trigger anything? Are you concerned that it will trigger anything specifically from the United States?
Look, I mean, they've said that they don't want us to introduce legislation. I say they, there are individual states that have said they don't want to. But I mean, we have to introduce legislation that we believe is appropriate for us to introduce. That's what I'm doing here. While at the same time, what I actually hope this legislation will trigger is more member states and other countries to do something similar. And that's starting to happen. So I've been working with my colleagues in the Netherlands, in Belgium, Norway. Belgium, Norway is obviously outside of the EU, but we have a number of countries moving at the moment. And what we know when countries move effectively together, you actually have a better and a greater response. So when we recognised Palestine, we did it with a number of other countries. Mm-hmm. When other countries did it, the response then and people standing up and listening, in particular the Israeli government, that is where you have the strongest impact. And can I say, I started this role in particular back in November. And when I first attended my council meeting, it was actually that first week, there were probably three or four countries, Ireland included, that at that time were advocating for greater humanitarian access. It's still dire in Gaza. More to be done when it comes to the West Bank. What's happening now in Lebanon? The last council meeting that I attended, there were 17 countries at least that have said, we want the Commission to bring forward more proposals that would impose stricter measures on the Israeli government. So this is what I hope
you
to
say
happen.
It's gathering momentum in Europe, but have you been asked or lobbied by any representative from the United States not to pass this occupied territories bill?
So no, is the honest answer. I mean, the embassy earlier on had made it very clear, and that was before I came into the department, their views on it, and they've made it known. But no, I haven't. And I've been working on this legislation, and I think it's the right thing to do. And so, I've said for the reason that there are a number of other countries moving at this time.
So you don't think there will be any risk to Irish jobs, to the Irish economy, to investment here as a result of this?
So that's a factor that has to be taken into consideration, but it's one. And I want to be clear on that. That's one factor in bringing forward the legislation that we have to take into account, because, again, we have a responsibility as a government to make sure that we're not introducing legislation or not taking actions that could have a detrimental impact. But at the same time, it is a balance. I mean, you know, there are some who would say that what we're doing at the moment may cause a reaction, but I believe it's the right thing to do. And I will continue to advocate in the way that I have been for a stronger response at a European level. It hasn't been strong enough. We all see that. We all know that it hasn't been strong enough. We've made some strides in the recent weeks where we've sanctioned specifically violent settlers in the West Bank. We've sanctioned those who are responsible for the October 7th attack. But unless we come together and agree to ban trade in the occupied territories, then I don't think at a European level we're doing enough. So I will continue to advocate for that, while at the same time, I'm absolutely confident, I hope with the support of colleagues across different parties, that we'll get this legislation across the line before the summer recess.
The countdown is well and truly on to Ireland's presidency of the EU starting on the 1st of July. It's only a few days away now. What would symbolise success for you at the end of the 6 months? Like, what is the headline achievement that you want to see Ireland gain?
I'm not sure I could say one thing, to be honest. For me, success, it's two things. It's It's making progress on some, you know, key legislative files and policy areas, and I can touch on maybe some of them now, but it's also making it real for people. So if we don't make the next 6 months, because I think there's a lot of people probably listening going, well, what is it? We keep talking about the presidency. What's going to happen?
The roads are going to be closed in this city, and unfortunately, and it's going to be disruptive, the, you know, and it's expensive. And
that's a fraction of it. You know, you have big council meetings that are going to happen, and you might have a day where, you know, there's going to be a bit of traffic disruption. But actually, what it means is over the next 6 months, Ireland as a country, it's not just chairing meetings. We're steering the agenda. We're steering really important files and legislative files, and the next EU budget, where we hope that we'll be at a point where we might be able to agree the final figure. I mean, that means something for people, because what we get for our farmers in CAP, what we get for money on innovation, Erasmus programmes for young people, money for peace programmes specific to Northern Ireland, that matters. And we're going to be at the table steering this discussion and these negotiations. You know, you've probably spoken many times, as I know you have, on this around online safety and child safety. There's going to be a really important moment in September where the Commission put forward ideas, and we'll be then steering that discussion to try and reach an agreement at an EU level. But separate to that, what's important to me is that people feel that and they see it, so they don't just think of road closures. There's a really exciting programme happening across all 27 member states and counties. So my own county is being paired, my own county of Meath is being paired with Italy. So for 6 months, we'll have a lot of things happening in County Meath, linking the two countries from a food, from a culture, from a business. I think Wicklow is paired with Spain. I think Dublin is with Greece. So everybody has an opportunity to get involved. And then our schools as well. So we'll have a school programme that will go out to school children in September. And it's just simplifying, what does the EU mean for people? I mean, I've grown up only ever knowing the EU. I've been an Irish citizen and an EU citizen. But what does that mean? It's the basics. It's back to being able to live, to study, to work, to travel, to do business across the EU in a way that is so easy that other countries would only love to. So it's about getting those key things done while at the same time making it real and making people understand what it is to be part of the EU.
Now, the cost is a factor that people have been talking about. I know the official estimate is around 180 million, but there are some people saying that it could cost up to 400 million euro. Could it reach that level?
So I don't believe so, and I'm not sure where that figure has come from. We've been very clear and open about the figures. So you have 165 to 85 million. You have security costs that have to be included in that as well.
Security, the bulk of that? Because Italy did it for 68 and Austria did it for 43.
So again, I think the way that's actually been added up, I don't think that's all of their costs. So, I've had different figures. I've had Denmark was 30 something million. There's no way that that could be done within that. So I think whatever way they're being reported, I'm not sure everything is included in that. So we're being very open and upfront about what it costs. But this is something that we do every 13 and a half years. This is something that requires us to host a lot of meetings, a lot of discussions. There's a lot of people involved in it. And there's a security element to it. I mean, you will at one stage have over 40 different heads of state, not just from within the EU, but across internationally coming to Ireland. So there's definitely a security element to it. But what we get back, what we gain from actually doing this, as I said, we are steering the direction in which the EU will go for decades to come. We are deciding issues around what type of money will be invested in our country and other countries and how people will benefit back. And even, you know, my own brief, I have three councils that I'll be involved in. From a security perspective, I really want us to prioritise maritime security. So Ireland, as an island nation where our maritime domain is seven times the size of our landmass, it's really important that we have a really clear focus on maritime security. So I will be able to navigate that discussion and be able to make sure that there's an emphasis on it, so we as a country benefit as well as everybody else.
Listen, just before we finish, you are launching the newly designed passport today.
Morning.
What's going to be different about it?
Well, look, I suppose international experts would say we should change our passport every couple of years to update our security measures in particular on it. So we have what is recognised as the fourth most secure passport in the world. So we're doing really well, but actually this new passport will make it even more secure. So there's a lot of time and a lot of new technology or new measures have gone into this passport to make sure that it is one of the most secure documents in the world. But actually for me, what's really exciting about it, because I've seen copies of it, this is quite literally a reflection of who we are. So we've asked people in Ireland to contribute and say, what would you like to see on the passport? So the Irish Wolfhound is actually the thing that came through the most. So you'll see that depicted in it. But it quite literally, when you go through the booklet, it it goes through the four seasons, it goes through the animals, the history that we think of when we think of Ireland, and it's all Irish artists that have been involved in this. So it's quite literally a reflection of us, who we are. I mean, the fox, the hare, the hedgehog, different types of animals and everything else are in it. But within that, then the security is. I mean, there's measures in this that you wouldn't see and haven't seen in other passports. So, just to acknowledge that a lot of people have been involved in this, and a lot of people have contributed to it. So we're launching it this morning, but it also comes with a new card as well. So if you apply for a new passport, or say you've just gotten an old, you know, the older version,
you have the option. You can
apply for a card, and that will work within Europe and within the UK. And I think for a lot of young people as well, find it a lot easier when you're travelling that you have this card. It's an identity card, but also it's a security measure as well. So people will be able to apply for that from next week. So hopefully you'll see many people. We've a lot of people around this time. If I could use this opportunity just to remind people, please check your passports. I'm a TD as well as everything else, and
we get
a lot, and when you get them over the line, let me tell you, it's better than doing anything for anybody. But this time of the year, there's people going on holidays, they check their passports the day or a few days before, and the last thing you want is people missing out. So just if you're heading anywhere, even if it's not holidays, please check your passport and your children's passports.
How is the passport system at the moment? Is there much of a wait time for people?
So, I mean, it is one of the most efficient systems that we have. If you're applying for a first-time passport as an adult, you can get it in a couple of days. For a first-time as a child, though, it is up to 4 weeks. So that's why I would say, if you're going on holidays, if you're applying for a first-time passport, even with things moving even quicker, you're still talking about a couple of weeks.
Get it done in time. All right, yep. Minister, thank you very much. Minister Helen McEntee.
The Clare Byrne Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.